Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDverdict.com. I'm your host, Clark Douglas. Today on the program, we're spotlighting music from Hammer horror films, and this is in large part made possible by a series of new CD releases which spotlight music from Hammer Studios. And we're going to begin with a series of selections from movies featuring Frankenstein, Hammer produced, and we'll begin with this piece from The Curse of Frankenstein. Take a listen and enjoy. Impressive piece written for the film The Curse of Frankenstein by Hammer musical master James Bernard. And we're going to feature another Bernard score now, a very enjoyable one, Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed. Thank you. James Bernard with an enjoyably gothic score for Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed, which some consider the best of that particular series. It was followed up in 1970 by a film entitled Horror of Frankenstein. It was a considerably more light-hearted Hammer horror film, and featured music from an Australian composer named Malcolm Williamson, which also changed up the pace a little bit. Let's take a listen. Music by Malcolm Williamson, written for the film The Horror of Frankenstein. James Bernard returned for the 1972 film Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell, and it's quite a good score. It has a really wonderful violin theme. Let's take a listen. Thank you. James Bernard's score for Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell. Do hope you enjoyed that music here on the Sounds and Sights of Cinema. Time to move from Frankenstein to vampires on the program. Next up, we offer a selection from composer Harry Robinson, written for Countess Dracula. You're listening to the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDVerdict.com, and we're spotlighting music from Hammer Studios on the program today, and we've featured quite a bit of music thus far by James Bernard, who is perhaps their most prominent composer. In addition to working on those Frankenstein scores we heard earlier, he also scored quite a few of the vampire movies, including The Kiss of the Vampire. Let's take a listen.
Thank you.
That's some of James Bernard's music for The Kiss of the Vampire. As the 60s turned into the 70s and Hammer started churning out more sexually explicit vampire films, composer Harry Robinson started scoring more and more of their efforts, including the controversial Lust for a Vampire. Take a listen. Music by Harry Robinson, written for Lust for a Vampire. It's good stuff, but most consider Robinson's score for Twins of Evil to be his strongest, most memorable music written for Hammer. Let's take a listen. Good Stuff, written for Twins of Evil by Harry Robinson. The film Vampire Circus wasn't particularly well received, but David Whittaker's score is intriguing stuff at times. Let's take a listen to a couple of selections. That's music written for Vampire Circus by David Whittaker. The final score we'll feature on the program today is another from composer James Bernard, actually his final film score written for Hammer, The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, a fine score and a great way for Bernard to cap off his long run at the studio. Let's take a listen. Thank you. night, ladies and gentlemen. I do hope you've enjoyed the Hammer horror music we featured for you on the program today. And right now it's time to move along to this week's movie review of the new film Transformers: Dark of the Moon. Michael Bay's Transformers was a disappointment, and his Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen was regarded by many, myself included, as an insufferable disaster. However, audiences have responded to the franchise with enthusiasm, so Bay is back once again with Transformers: Dark of the Moon. It's yet another letdown from the famed director, but it comes a bit closer to hitting the mark than either of its predecessors. Our story begins with a compelling prologue set in the 1960s, which provides an alternative history of the moon landing. Apparently, Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong actually discovered the wreckage of a massive Cybertronian spacecraft when they arrived on the moon. But the government covered that fact up for security reasons. The ship had been piloted by Sentinel Prime, voiced by Leonard Nimoy, and had been carrying advanced technology, which could have saved the Cybertronians if his mission had been completed. Fast forward to the present, where heroic Autobot Optimus Prime, voiced by Peter Cullen, has just learned of the moon landing cover-up. Hurt by the betrayal, but recognizing an opportunity to help his own race, Optimus sets out on a mission to revive Sentinel Prime and retrieve the lost technology. Unfortunately, the villainous Decepticon Megatron, voiced by Hugo Weaving, is still hatching a diabolical plan of his own. Meanwhile, our old pal Sam Witwicky has just graduated from college and moved in with his new girlfriend, Carly. Sam's played by Shia LaBeouf. Carly's played by Rosie Huntington-Whiteley. Alas, despite receiving a medal from President Obama and earning a college degree, Sam is having a difficult time finding work. He's finally reduced to accepting a job working in a mailroom for a company run by the terribly eccentric Bruce Brazos, played by John Malkovich. The job is one of many frustrations for Sam, who's also upset about his girlfriend's flirty boss, played by Patrick Dempsey, and his self-perceived lack of significance. However, it's only a matter of time before Sam finds a way to insert himself into the latest Autobots vs. Decepticons smash fest. In a variety of ways, Transformers: Dark of the Moon represents the very best and worst of Michael Bay's tendencies as a director. That's kind of a relief when you consider that Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen was basically an endless demonstration of the reasons Bay is often picked as the critical whipping boy of summer blockbusters. However, this installment of the Transformers franchise also packs in a few potent reminders of why Bay's films are so immensely popular. Let's start with the good news. The final hour of Transformers: Dark of the Moon comes awfully close to being the thrilling Transformers adventure we've all been hoping for since the first film was announced. While Bay's action scenes in the previous film were cluttered, choppy, and often incomprehensible, this time he gives us surprising clarity, fluidity, and a real sense of space. At long last, he's served up some action scenes which offer the kind of genuine primal thrills a film about robots punching other robots ought to deliver. The director turns in his best visual work to date, and his use of 3D is some of the strongest I've seen lately. Additionally, the Transformers are actually the central figures in the plot this time around, as the saga of Optimus, Sentinel, and Megatron forms the core of the story. Finally, it feels as if Bay is placing the spotlight on the title characters, which is something which should have been a given from the start. The pseudoscience Aaron Kruger's screenplay offers is entertaining as opposed to eye-roll-inducing this time around, and his X-Men first-class-style historical fiction element is a fun idea which leads to the immortal cinematic moment in which Optimus Prime shakes hands with Buzz Aldrin. Any film in which such an event takes place can't be all bad, right? Unfortunately, to get to Bay's summer movie fun in the final hour, you're going to have to slog through the film's insufferable first half, which is dominated by the movie's awful human characters and some of the worst cinematic comedy you'll witness this year. The series has never been a great outlet for Shia LaBeouf's acting, but he somehow manages to turn in the most obnoxious performance of his career in his third outing as Sam Witwicky. I suspect that LaBeouf is trying to pull off some sort of explosive Robert Downey Jr.-ish energy in his performance, but his rushed quips and high-octane temper tantrums grate on the nerves. Fortunately, during the last hour, LaBeouf tones down this nonsense and settles into an agreeably forgettable action hero mode. As for newcomer Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, she's here strictly as an object for the cameras to leer at lustfully from time to time. She serves the same function as Megan Fox in the previous installments and has even less of a character to play. However, things get really bad when we're dealing with the supporting characters. For some unknown reason, Bay has encouraged his actors to go to embarrassing extremes in their performances. The characters played by John Malkovich, John Turturro, Alan Tudyk, Ken Jeong, Frances McDormand, and Patrick Dempsey are so cartoonish that they make Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck look like characters in a Tarkovsky film. Only Turturro manages to wring some amusement from his character, as his comic timing saves a few potentially terrible moments. Everyone else just falls flat on their face. Malkovich has a scene which made me wince in pity. While I appreciate the fact that Bay is attempting to bring some levity to the proceedings in an era when too many summer blockbusters are grim, humorless affairs, the seemingly endless moments of intolerable comedy he delivers in this film make one yearn for the film to start taking itself too seriously. There's a rather entertaining action movie lurking within Transformers: Dark of the Moon, but Bay nearly crushes all of the progress he makes in this installment by amplifying the poor qualities of his human characters. It's a shame that some of the strong action sequences he delivers are stuck in a film this frustrating. Still, I must make a confession. Though Bay's film does contain some of the worst scenes you'll see in any movie this summer, or all year for that matter, I enjoyed sitting through the wild inconsistency of this mess more than I did sitting through the consistent mediocrity of Green Lantern, Cars 2, or Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides. That's not a recommendation, or even a suggestion that Dark of the Moon is any better than those films. It just is what it is. I give Transformers Dark of the Moon a rating of 2 stars out of 4. And that concludes our time together on the program today. I do hope you've enjoyed the show and that you'll join us again next week for more music and movie reviews. Until then, take care of yourself. Back at you later.